This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us in studio today are Darcy Oishi. He's with the Plant Pest Control Branch of the State Department of Agriculture. He's responsible for emergency response, biocontrol, and identification programs. Kalani Matsumura is with the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources. He coordinates the Oahu Master Gardener Program. Kalani supports sustainability, environmental protection through home gardening, urban landscapes, and school garden education. And joining us via phone from Maui is Cynthia Nazario Leary. She's also a UH Extension agent and is a statewide and Maui coordinator for the Master Gardener Volunteer Program. In addition to her love of plants, Nazario Leary appreciates a good pollinator. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So glad you could join us. And today, listeners, we're talking about what's bugging you. Darcy, let's start with you. I mean, this is summertime. I mean, that's when the bugs just get going.
Yep, exactly. It's peak bug period, and there's a lot bugging me.
Okay. Like, what's your number one buggy thing?
Well, right now, we're entering swarm season for bees, so... we're thoroughly into swarm season, so we're getting a lot more calls with bee activity in people's yards, sometimes in places where you don't want them, like utilities and other things like that. So that's something that we're dealing with, especially we haven't been having too many calls yet about bees at ports of entry, which will be problematic since we don't want to have cases like Africanized honeybee or Asian honeybee coming into Hawaii and some of the pests and diseases that they can spread.
Right. You want to keep those outsiders out.
Yes.
And Cynthia, you appreciate a good pollinator. How are the calls over there?
We've also had some swarming going on here, but I think for us right now, in terms of bugs that are probably bugging us and that we're getting calls about, are the fruit flies. It's mango season, and so people are calling to see what they can do to control the fruit flies that are stinging their precious mangoes. So we're very fortunate that we have a really cool fruit fly trap that's available and to the public. We teach free classes on how to control your fruit flies, and a lot of it is just proper management and understanding, you know, keeping your area clean and good hygiene, and then putting these traps up and monitoring them to make sure that you can keep your population of fruit flies down so you can enjoy your mangoes and other fruits that they might sting as well.
But pollinators can be good, right?
I mean, bees. For sure. certainly you want to encourage the honeybees in your gardens, as well as butterflies. And many of flies and beetles are also pollinators. You just have to monitor and see, you know, the challenge with some butterflies and moths are that they're in their larval stage, they're caterpillars, and so caterpillars like to munch on things. And so as long as you understand what type of moth and butterfly that you have in your garden and you know that it won't be a harmful caterpillar, you can encourage it in your garden. And then bees we always like to encourage because they're great, fantastic pollinators, and they're very valuable to our agriculture to make sure that our edible crops are pollinated so that we can enjoy things like zucchinis and watermelons.
And Kalani, you folks emphasize pollinators a lot at the Urban Garden.
Yes, actually, tomorrow we'll have a big pollinator awareness event at Urban Garden Center in Pearl City from 8:30 to 11:30. And we'll have all kinds of educational displays, hands-on activities for the kids. We'll have a plant sale with lots of great pollinator plants. And we'll have lots of information on our native pollinators. So we'll have Dr. Will Haynes from UH talking about the Kamehameha butterfly and the Blackburn's butterfly, as well as we'll have someone talking about the native yellow-faced bees, which many people don't know exist. And we'll learn about what kind of plants they like. And we'll also have, for the Kamehameha butterfly, we'll have mamaki plants for sale as well.
You know, I got a good tip from Ethel up at the Honeybee Project at UH, and she was telling me that if you have mango trees and you've got flowers, if you want to pollinate them, you hang a dead tilapia in your tree, and that'll attract flies. She says flies do a really
right,
good
it's
job.
Right, it's actually flies that pollinate the mango trees. So you want to encourage those flies to pollinate your flowers.
Well, you know, we're talking about bees, but we also this week heard a lot about a new moth that is hitting Maui. We did talk to Jeff Bagshaw, who is with the Department of Land and Natural Resources Office there on Maui. He talked about how that this was really the first time this moth from Southeast Asia, the Rami moth, has been found in the U.S. It could threaten Hawaii's unique plants, our medicinal plants, the mamaki tea, and a lot of the cordage plants, and they could impact our cultural practices. Here's what he had to say this morning.
When they first hatch out, they're black with really bright red-orange spots and some spiky white hairs, but what also distinguishes them is their behavior. If you kind of threaten them or wave your hand over them like, you know, a bird coming in, they'll raise up their head and they'll wag it around and they'll actually spit. So most caterpillars just kind of sit there and hope that their bright colors tell the bird or whatever else to not eat them. But these caterpillars have some attitude. You know, there's two important things that people can do, and that is to go to and report it if they believe they've seen it. Well, at first I would say go and look at the Pulele Hua Project website, and you can see Kamehameha butterflies and their larvae. The important thing is for people to not just start killing all caterpillars that they see, because it's not just this one. On Maui, we've got an endangered hawk moth that's unique to Maui, and its caterpillar can look like a tomato hornworm. So people need to look at those first, and then they can go to the Report a Pest, 643pest.org.
Okay, that was Jeff Bagshaw with DLNR Maui office. We haven't seen it here on Oahu yet, or on the Big Island, is that correct, Darcy?
No, we've only seen it on Maui at this point in time.
Okay, and we don't know how it came in, because I understand that the eggs can be very tiny.
Yes, exactly. This is actually the first incident of this species actually being found in the United States. So this is what we call a First Nation record. So unusual for it to appear first on a neighbor island. Usually if it's either on Oahu or the Big Island, that first appearances occur here in Hawaii.
Is that because of the shipping?
Shipping and industry-related issues. So we don't know how this got here. The adult moth is rather pretty, so it could be collectors. There's a variety of ways that this could have entered, but we're just getting the kind of information that we would need to make even a guess at a pathways analysis on how this could have gotten into Hawaii.
And Jeff is saying it's being found in backyards and in the forest.
It was first reported actually in backyards. So it's unlikely that we're going to be able to eradicate this, based upon the first reports that we received. Department of Agriculture knew it was basically established. So this is unfortunately going to be something that people are going to have to learn to live with in their gardens.
And Jeff was describing the caterpillar. What does the moth look like?
The moth is it's difficult. It's I would actually just say go to the website. Because the moth has also different color morphs.
Mm.
So and the caterpillar too can have different color morphs. So it can look different. There's a lot of mimics out there. The adult moth actually looks very much like it can be mistaken for a Kamehameha butterfly quite easily. So, and they utilize some of the same plants. So there's those additional issues.
Now, Kalani, I know at the Urban Garden Centers, when we have these programs across the state, you do have a garden doctor, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody, if people have questions about a disease or a plant, or a bug, they can bring in a sample and ask you to identify, what do I have in my backyard?
Yeah, many people don't know that actually the UH Master Gardeners on each island provide a helpline service. So we're here for people to call, email us with pictures, or to walk in and visit us in person, and with any kind of plant question or garden question. So definitely if you've got some kind of pests on your plants that you don't know what they are, come give us a call or email or visit us, and we'll do our best to diagnose it. Also, if you do think you've got something unusual, something that might be a new pest, definitely don't hesitate to call 643-PEST. That's the Department of Ag helpline.
So what else is swarming this summer?
Well, it just depends what's in season. Like Cynthia said, you know, it's mango season right now, so fruit flies are definitely a concern. Also, we're getting through gardenia season, so we've got a lot of calls recently about thrips on gardenias. So people are, you know, so excited for their beautiful gardenia flowers to come out, and then they open up and they're brown and discolored. Sometimes even the flowers are falling off the bush. So that can be due to thrips, a very tiny insect, and it's very tough to control because they're hiding in there and doing their damage on the developing buds and leaves before the flower actually opens.
It is beautiful. You drive around and you see all the trees, all the plants in bloom. It's a wonderful time, and everybody's got the lay for graduation and weddings, and but they come with pests. You just have to deal with them.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely had thrips crawling on me when I've gotten a lay, but that's okay. A few won't hurt you.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, our guests in our studio are Darcy Oishi. He's the Biological Control Section Chief for the Hawaii State Department of Agriculture. Kalani Matsumura is with the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources. He coordinates the UH Master Garden Program on Oahu. And Cynthia Nazario-Leary is an extension agent and is the statewide and Maui coordinator for the Master Gardener Volunteer Program. We're talking about pests and disease in your backyard and in your island forest. We invited these experts to a roundtable discussion, and we'd like to know what's on your mind. Join the discussion by calling at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. So, Darcy, tell us about the coconut rhinoceros beetle, because they're pretty active around this time, aren't they?
Yeah, so generally activity seems to get exacerbated in the warm summer months based upon our history with the program. So, you know, for this particular program, what we're likely to see is what I'll call drift, where the beetles are popping up and moving a little bit more on their own. So we're already seeing some of evidence of that where traps that we have about 3,000 traps placed around Oahu, and in areas where we know there is or is likely a breeding site, we'll see trap pits that extend a little bit further than normal during the summer months.
Like, can you talk about anything recently, like where you've had a big find with a bunch of the larvae?
Well, in recently we've been really attacking the Waiava area. That is actually where the main battlefront for
the hotspot
response is. We have a variety of breeding sites there, and my field crews are pulling out a lot of larvae and a few adults right now, which most of these larvae would probably be turning into adults in about a month and emerging if we're not taking these mitigative steps to go in and remove them. And the project is at a really key phase right now. We've got some new tech that's coming online. We're waiting for it to be delivered that we'll be able to treat and destroy a lot of breeding sites with this. And this is all in partnership with UH. We're hoping to have detector dogs deployed on a training basis at first as early as July. That's when the training will actually begin. So we'll be evaluating 4 dogs and 2 handlers, and ultimately we want to have a 2-dog team that can help sniff out breeding sites so we can go in, attack it, and destroy the breeding site. We found that is the most effective way of controlling coconut rhinoceros beetle.
And these colonies, these breeding sites, are we talking like a couple dozen, a couple hundred?
Couple hundred. Yeah, I'm forecasting by the end of our operations to initially mitigate the site, we'll remove several thousand.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's just on Oahu right now, is that correct?
Only on Oahu.
So we've got to make sure that it doesn't go to the neighbor islands.
Yes, and we've been very successful in, and it's largely in part by the Navy's efforts in basically protecting our ports, whether it's Honolulu Airport, Hickam, Pearl Harbor, or even Kalaeloa. We've done an excellent job in beating the beetle back away from those areas. So I think we've really minimized the chances of it hopping on something and getting off island. And now we need to focus our efforts and really hit it hard in especially the Wai'ava area.
And we've talked earlier, and you do get calls from people who think they've got the coconut rhinoceros beetle, but then it's something else.
Yeah, so we're really lucky that most people, one, that we have enough engagement that a lot of people call in with reports and concerns, and we're even luckier that almost all of those reports and concerns are not coconut rhinoceros beetle. Almost all of those are the oriental flower beetle. And the oriental flower beetle, people think is a large insect, but the coconut rhinoceros beetle is actually significantly larger. So think of the length of your thumb or a Vienna sausage size beetle. That's the size of the coconut rhinoceros beetle, and it has a horn. Another common mistake that people make is thinking dung beetles, which can have a horn also, are coconut rhinoceros beetle, and people think it's a baby coconut rhinoceros beetle, and that's not how it works. Baby coconut rhinoceros beetles are white grubs that probably, to me, look more freaky than adult beetles.
Yes, they do. They're very freaky. I second that.
But they're excellent composters. But we don't want them composting.
Right, and that's the things, right? You have put out warnings before. If there's an infestation, don't move your compost piles around across the island because you might be spreading.
Yeah, and it's a good point that most of our pest issues, a lot of our pest issues, and it's most especially with our responses, the insect that we're targeting may be a problem, but oftentimes what results in failure is not the insect, it's not the biology and the ecology of the target, it's the behavior of people that in the infested area, whether they live or work there, that wind up spreading the problem.
Okay. You know, we did have a call on the line, but this caller was shy. Steve from Kona, he's asking, do we have any new developments on the coqui frog controls on the Big Island?
Coqui frog control is, no, unfortunately not. We're still limited to the control techniques that have been developed years ago. So what is available to homeowners really is going to be citric acid-based solutions that, helping to mitigate the spread on Big Island, it's a tough sell. It's going to be really hard to achieve even localized control at this point.
Okay, so that's a little disheartening, but...
it's a lot disheartening.
Yes, yes. For folks who don't know what a coqui sounds like, listen to this. Pretty distinctive.
Yes, and so coqui frog is, it's obviously spreading on the Big Island, and I'm aware of all the problems in Kona. They've been getting louder and noisier, and we have the department has no real good solutions to offer there at this point.
I was really stunned when I went to Hilo Town and I heard that at sunset. I thought it was a bird at first, and then I was like, well, wait a minute. No, this is something else. And I was so surprised when I went to my hotel and they gave me earplugs. Even though I had an air-conditioned room, they said, no, you can still hear the coqui frog at night.
Yeah.
And I was just amazed.
Mm-hmm. It's deafening for sure.
Do you get questions about coqui frog over there on Maui, Cynthia?
Yes, we do, because right now they are trying to basically minimize the coqui frog. We have some populations here, but they're pretty much relegated to certain areas. Maliko Gulch is our primary area where we have coqui frog. And so in concert with MISC, actually the Master Gardener Program, we just had a workshop where we got trained on how to control and how to identify and manage coqui frogs so that we can share that information with the public so people can start to take action in their own yards and alert MISC, which is the Maui Invasive Species Committee, when they have a coqui frog in their area. But MISC is really trying to control the difficult-to-reach areas, which are the gulches, and so they're asking the Master Gardener Program and other homeowners to kind of, learn how to control it on their own properties. And so, as Darcy mentioned, the citric acid spray is pretty much the way that they control it. But also you can do some management things, whereas you basically want to reduce the type of vegetation that the coquille frogs prefer, which is, of course, moist and wet areas where they can hide. So like bananas, you know, heliconias, gingers, tall grasses, all those things, you know, lush vegetation really allow them to reproduce and proliferate. So if you can create cleared areas, you can hopefully minimize the amount of coquille frog that's able to be on your property.
You had mentioned ravines and ridges, and I remember going out with the Department of Agriculture several years ago. We were looking for some coquille in Waimanalo, and we went out there at night with our lamps on our heads looking for it. And it was a windy night, and I was told that they don't like wind.
No. And they're very hard. We did one in Haiku, and I found more cane spiders than I did coquille frogs. You can hear them calling, but to actually locate them can kind of be tricky because they are very small, and they can kind of hear you coming. And as soon as they sense that there might be a potential predator nearby, they will hide themselves. So you really have to know where to look and check under leaves and check within stems and everything else. So it can actually be frustrating because you know that you can hear them and you know they're probably within a meter or so, and yet you still can't find them. They can also, you know, the way the sound echoes too, is it can sometimes be hard to locate them. And so that's where if you kind of know where your coquille frogs are and you have your citric acid spray, then you can apply that within the area and then just continue to monitor the area to see if you continue to hear the coquille frog.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We're talking about what's bugging you this summer. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Cole Academy Child Development Centers, now open on Hawaii Island for children in Kona Kohala ages 6 weeks to 6 years. More at thecoleacademy.com.
On the next Radio Lab, we meet a woman whose heartbeat...
Don't panic.
...has something to say to all of us.
It feels like somebody has a rubber mallet and is banging on the inside of my sternum.
About fear...
Something must be wrong.
It's like she couldn't escape.
Fragility...
It's never happened to me before.
I see you, heart.
And friendship.
I see you.
Join us for our Radio Love Fest special, recorded live at Brooklyn Academy of Music on the next Radio Lab.
Saturday morning at 10. Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors The Rice Partnership, Kaiser Permanente, and PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training.
You are back with The Conversation. We did get another shy caller, Toby from Honolulu. He says he sees clouds of gnats when he goes out golfing. What creates this phenomena of gnat swarms? Who wants to take that?
Ooh. I'm wondering if he's really seeing gnats now. It depends on the time of day and where he's golfing, because we have ants that have a tendency that like lawns. And they will actually swarm on hot, humid days in the afternoon, and form big clouds. And we actually had PGA problems before because of ants.
Really?
Yeah.
There were
concerns. Yeah, there were concerns that these ant swarms would affect the play of the professionals.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah. So they can be a large problem. A nuisance problem, but gnats. There's a lot of fungus gnats. They generally will come out a couple of days after heavy rains. There's nothing we can really do about it. It's part of the natural cycle. They just the the early life stages will just kind of sit waiting for the right opportunity and conditions, and when they manifest, heavy rains and everything getting nicely soaked, they'll emerge and form all these dense clouds. And it's the solution would probably be, if they bother you, better not golf.
Kalani, do you get questions about gnats?
Sometimes, often for people growing plants indoors. And that's, you know, it's just they like that moist potting soil. So just if you can let it dry out a little bit between waterings, or maybe cover it with mulch or some cinders, that can often help to suppress the problem.
Yeah, I had one in my coffee the other morning.
Extra flavor.
Yes.
And don't leave out old fruits on your counter, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that kind of thing, because that will help attract them as well.
Well, of course, that attracts the fruit flies as well. Yeah. So other little things buzzing around your house.
Gosh, what else are you seeing there on Maui?
Oh, well, you know, we just recently had somebody complaining about mites on their plants. We are heading into summer. Well, actually, summer's already here. And it's, you know, in these hotter, warmer temperatures, sometimes you'll see mite populations increase on your plants. And so it's a good time to monitor your plants and look for mite damage, because the sooner you can spot it, the easier it is to control. But spider mites can be tricky, because they're a mite, and Darcy can also probably speak to this. They're harder to control than an insect, which is different than a mite. And so a lot of times people will be controlling other insects, and they actually make it easier for the mite to reproduce, because they basically killed off all the mites' predators by trying to control, by spraying the pesticides. So understanding that you truly do have mites on your plants, usually it's some type of stippling on your leaf, so it'll look like your leaf has all these tiny little pin dots on it. And if you look underneath the leaf, a lot of times you'll see these really tiny, quick-moving mites, or, you know, bugs. They're not really bugs, but you'll see these fast-moving organisms on your leaf. Sometimes they'll have a web associated with them. Sometimes they don't. But usually it's that stippling on the leaf, because they're basically sucking the contents of the leaf out. And as soon as you see mites, it's best to try and control them. And so you can use some contact pesticides to control them. A lot of times just spraying them and disrupting their life cycle can make them go away, but you'll want to be on top of it. And so usually every 7 to 10 days you're going to need to kind of make sure that you're disrupting their life cycle and removing them from the leaves, or you can remove the infested leaves as well. But mites can easily really take down your plant if you don't keep them in check.
We should talk about housekeeping, too, because when you do have diseased or infested leaves, we should clean up, bag them, and make sure you don't just leave it in your yard to fester, right?
Exactly. I mean, hygiene in the garden is just as important as good hygiene in the home. If you're cleaning up dead leaves and, fruit to keep it from rotting, you're going to minimize a lot of potential pests and diseases coming into your garden. So having a clean garden in terms of making sure there's no debris or rotting vegetation is really important in minimizing the pests and diseases that can come into your garden.
Okay, we do have a call coming in from the Big Island. Patrick, do you have a question for us?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
So I'm the president of the East Hawaii Cacao Association. We grow cacao, make chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a new pest here. It's been here for about 11 years, the Queensland longhorn beetle. And it is by far, I think, the worst pest to ever hit us. And it's spreading, for sure. And so right now it eats cacao, kukui nut, citrus, avocados, and there's a couple other sago palms. And they're spreading. They've doubled their area. They're all the way to Hilo now.
What are you doing? What are you doing to combat it?
Nothing, basically. We're just getting started combating them, and that's public awareness. The Department of Agriculture is really helping. USDA is doing tests on them to see if they can develop some kind of attractant. And we're just about to put out traps. And the county is going to help us. But right now, nobody's really doing anything. There's a lot of talk, but we need some funding.
Okay, good point.
Richard Amici is interested. This is his district. And
you want some relief.
It's the worst pests. You know, the coqui frogs, they make noise, fire ants, they hurt. But these bugs actually destroy trees.
Right, and when it's your livelihood, I'm sure that hurts, yes.
Yeah, and then on the Big Island, we have two new industries, which is cacao and ulu, and they're attacking our trees.
Okay, well, Darcy, what can you tell us about this? Is it just on the Big Island?
Acalalepta estatica is only on the Big Island at this point in time, and caller's correct. It is causing a lot of problems on select crops and industries. And it's significant. It causes, it bores into the wood and causes, it basically tunnels into the wood and creates galleries that can weep. It weakens the tree, sets it up for secondary infections, and can, and the feeding damage itself can really result in the death of the tree also. And the problem with this species is very little is known about it. And I can say that my staff are the world experts on Acalalepta estatica, but that's not saying much because prior to its arrival and our ability to firmly document its was here, which took a number of years because we only found it what we call at large. We couldn't associate it with any damage or trees at that point. When we first detected it 11 years ago.
Where does it come from?
It comes from Australia. And the scientific information that we got from Australia, and we relied heavily on our partners to prompt that those to get information, isn't really there. It's a native to the Queensland area of Australia, and not much has been done to research it because it does not pose a problem there. But here it is. And that's often the case when you take an insect out of context or disease, there's a system of controls that keep the population in balance with the environment. And this is another example of a pest that comes to Hawaii that really has nothing to keep it in check.
So there's a glaring need to find something.
Yes. And so, you know, the Department of Agriculture is acting on this, but our hands are tied in a lot of ways. There's just not enough information. There's just not enough attention to get the ball rolling. We're in collaboration with USDA right now. I've been trying to raise the profile of this insect nationally. It poses a threat not just to the cacao and ulu industries, but, you know, if it were to get to the U.S. mainland, it could damage an already suffering citrus industry. Mm. So there's more than just local effects and impacts, and we need to really focus on the kinds of control methods that can be put in place for it. But when we're talking about food crops and a very large insect with presumably a long life cycle, that makes control even harder to figure out and determine. So we've got a number of challenges. I've reached out through a bilateral commission for help from Australia also. And I'm beginning to identify what a biocontrol program will look like because in anticipation that maybe we're not able to find timely solutions, and that's a possibility that we have to consider, that despite all our efforts, we may not find a way to control this thing.
And our poor farmers are out there.
Yes.
You know, trying to make a living and trying to produce our food, and now they've got this pest and no one knows how to deal with
exactly.
it. Exactly. Okay, so we do have to raise the profile on that one. We have another call coming in from Pune. Marjean? Do you have a question?
Marjean.
Okay.
Thank you very much for trying.
Yes, what's your question?
Yes, First of all, I wanted to thank, the participants for taking the time to help farmers. I live in the Pune area, so lower Pune, very close to the lava flow of last year. We got lucky. We have everything. We have the coqui frogs, fire ants, which we are managing. And right now, I am in our property, our main project here. We're growing critically endangered Hawaiian plants, including grasses of all kinds. And we also have an organic vegetable garden, and I'm growing tomatoes. And I was wondering, I've had pretty good success with cherry tomatoes, and I would like to ask our master gardeners and the experts who are on this program, what tomato hybrids would they recommend for our lower Pune area? That means we have heavy rainfall, problems with mildew. And then before they answer my question, since the coqui frogs came up, I just wanted to say that, yes, we do have, these are invasive species, and a lot of people are affected by the noise they make. But I also have noticed that they're very good deterrents against termites. I've noticed on multiple occasions, just about now, on certain nights, we have termite swarms, and coqui frogs actually gobble them up. And we also have chickens, and the chickens are keeping their numbers down because when they do see them, they do eat them. And so this is one side of the noise problem. And, of course, I know that coqui frogs are in competition for insects with some of our indigenous species. But as far as the noise, I just wanted our listeners to maybe think that, in a good environmentally friendly world that we're trying to make and safeguard. I've worked in wonderful places like the Bird Island in the Seychelles and in the Corcovado National Park in Costa Rica. And, listeners have to realize that in these wonderful ecosystems, there is noise at night. I mean, in Costa Rica, we have the howler monkeys crying practically all night long. On Bird Island, we had 2 million sooty terns nesting on the ground, and the pelagic birds or seabirds, they also sing all night. And it was really disappointing to me, who was the resident naturalist on the islands at the time, to talk to tourists who were complaining about noise. I mean, if you don't want to hear birds, why in the world do you come to Bird Island?
Okay.
And, these were people who had been warned in advance.
Right.
That, the nights would be noisy, and we would offer them earplugs. But again, I've gotten used to hearing coqui frogs, and it doesn't disturb me.
Okay, well, getting back, to your question about...
This is just a little thing that, if we are living in a healthy ecosystem, we should expect noise, and it always saddens me that as humans, we have absolutely lost our tolerance
for noise,
natural
yes.
Natural noise.
Okay, well, you had a question about the vegetable gardens. Connie, can you answer that?
Sure. In regards to your tomatoes, they're definitely a challenge to grow here in Hawaii. We have all sorts of pests and diseases from everything from the ground up, from nematodes in the soil, powdery mildews on the leaves, and during the wet periods, especially in Pune, you might get things like late blight, Phytophthora, diseases, or I forget if that's anthracnose or Phytophthora now. Here on Oahu, we see a lot of tomato yellow leaf curl virus, so your tomato plants might be growing very nicely, and then you start noticing the new leaves starting to get more stunted, turning yellow, cupping upwards. That's it. You've got the virus, and there's nothing you can do. Best to, at that point, pull out your plants and dispose of them. So what can you do? Well, the best thing, I think, like you said, is to look for varieties that grow well here. So the University of Hawaii has a seed lab. You can order seeds directly from them. These are varieties that have been bred over the years to grow well in our conditions. But there's a lot out there as well. Look online at online seed catalogs. But look for varieties that have resistance to diseases such as powdery mildew and yellow leaf curl virus, and that can go a long way. But, you know, it's such a long answer, so that's why the Master Gardeners are here. You know, come talk to us, and we can get into a long conversation, one-on-one about your tomatoes. There's a lot of other things, like abiotic disorders as well. People try to grow nice heirloom tomatoes, but with our variable temperatures, it can get really hot, then cooler, then hot, dry, wet, and as the fruit grows, it's kind of growing unevenly, and you can get disorders like blossom end rot, where the bottom is dark and rotten. Adding calcium to your soil can help with that, but it is a challenge here in Hawaii. So stick with your cherry tomatoes if you're having problems. Those are some of the easiest and tastiest to grow.
Yeah, they're pretty hardy. Okay, we have another call. Tom from Lapa'ahoehoe.
Aloha.
Aloha. What's on your mind?
Yes, I live in Lapa'ahoehoe. I got a 3-acre lot out in Lapa'ahoehoe. I've been living on for about 20 years. And before the Koki frogs became rampant, I had cleared, it was formerly pasture land, so I just cleared a large swath of property, and which basically it was a great boundary. As the Koki frogs moved into the area of Lapa'ahoehoe, I was pretty much insulated because I clear cut a lot of property around my house. But as the speaker was mentioning earlier about using different citrus or citric acid formulas, if you have one or two of those frogs on your property at night and it's just keeping you awake, you can actually go out with a spotlight, this is my method, a spotlight. And I'm a master gardener, by the way, from CTAR. And I'll just go out with a big rubber slipper and a spotlight, and if you're patient enough, you'll find it, and you give it a whack, and you'll eliminate the problem that's bothering you that night.
Okay, there you go.
The rubber slipper.
it works. As far as I did have a question, and this is about, it just seems that Hawaii Island seems to be the breeding ground and ground zero for most of the antigens and the pathogens and the varroa mites and the coffee beetles. It just seems like, to me, whenever I see on TV, there was an outbreak of little fire ants out in Waimanalo, for example, when this did occur on the news one day, and they sent the Department of Ag SWAT team out there with about 20 individuals with their bee costumes and their spray bottles, and they eliminated the problem, but it didn't seem like over the past 20 years, why didn't the Big Island receive that sort of treatment?
Yep, my heart goes out to you. I've talked to many biologists who were sounding the call decades ago about Koki frog, and just said if we don't do something now and just hit it with resources, it's going to be a problem later. We did have another caller on the line, a shy caller, Kay from Makapu. Her question is about the citric acid. How much is needed? Does anybody know what the formula is, or where should they go to get that type of information?
They should contact, I know the Maui Invasive Species Committee, they are the ones that are actively providing gardeners and spraying the citric acid, so they can provide the formulations for you. So I would contact the Maui Invasive Species Committee.
Okay. And, we did also talk to Emily Kirk, who's an assistant extension agent in sustainable and organic agriculture with the Cooperative Extension Service on Kauai. And she flagged a big issue over there on that island, which is with the rose ring parakeet.
Often in the summertime, there are a lot of problematic pests that we deal with year-round. Here on Kauai, one that's become a really big issue recently is the rose ring parakeet. Especially, we get a lot of complaints in the summer. They're here year-round, but all of those fruits that are coming into season now, like the lychee and the mango, the parakeets just come in and they can do a lot of damage in a very short period of time. So for managing those, I think the best option just to keep your fruit safe, basically, is either netting the whole tree if you can, if the tree is small enough, or bagging the fruit. And that's a place where a home gardener definitely has an advantage over a commercial farmer, because it's just so much more logistically challenging to manage an orchard versus if you're just trying to protect one or two trees. And then, the other year-round pest that we have is pigs, and they're a huge issue. They can come in and they can tear up a whole garden just in one night. it's definitely frustrating. They make a big muddy mess, and the best you can do is really salvage what you can and start over. Get out the shovel and fill in the pukas. If you have fencing is really the best option to keep them out, or talk to a neighbor that might like to hunt. If it's just a couple in the neighborhood, they might be able to find them. So for folks who are living in the city, that might not be as much of an issue, but especially out in the more rural areas, we do see a lot of pigs across the islands.
Yes, pigs. I mean, I know when I lived in Nu'uanu, we had pigs coming down into our yard, rooting around, and that's a big, big problem.
Oh, yeah. Well, my background's in conservation, so pigs are a huge problem, trampling the native plants. But hog wire fencing goes a long way, for sure. But for, you know, that might be a little expensive and impractical for a gardener or small landowner. So we've been seeing a lot of success with electric fencing. It can be inexpensive, really flexible, easy to set up temporarily around different gardens. And it's worked great at our Waimanalo Research Station to keep the pigs out of the cornfields or different garden plots there.
What about the parakeets? I mean, do they, you know, it's just that one island, just Kauai?
For now. So anywhere that rose ring parakeets have made itself known outside of people's homes where they're appropriate as pets. Actually, they're no longer appropriate as pets. They're regulated. They can pose an agricultural problem and be a nuisance also.
And I have seen bills at the legislature, folks asking for help to remedy this.
Yeah, the problem with the parakeets is that they have this explosive potential for populations to grow. But they're also really smart. They adapt their behaviors. So every time someone develops a control method, which might be scaring the birds, it might be, altering the environment, they eventually figure it out, learn, adapt, and continue to pose a problem, because that's what happens when your pest is sometimes as smart, if not smarter, than you are.
What about the reproduction control, like we've seen with pigeons, that sometimes when they try and deal with that?
Yeah, so there are chemical controls that could be used, so there's sterilants and avicides, and the department has been looking into, there's actually a working group to figure out these issues, and that is part of the total mix of things that of integrated pest management that we're looking at.
Okay. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. What else do you folks want to talk about? maybe three. Okay, 3 minutes.
Well, I think one common issue that's come up is just how challenging these issues are. Some people are questioning, why can't the Department of Ag do more? Well, it's just too big of a problem sometimes, and it's just a matter of containing it. So really the best solution is to prevent these new pests from coming in the first place. And people are the main problem, you know, importing things. Some of our gardeners, you know, they love their plants so much, they're going to bring in a plant, even though they know there's a plant quarantine. And, you know, that's part of the problem.
Yeah. Okay. Any final thoughts, Cynthia?
I was going to just reiterate the same thing, is that for everyone to just be educated and know that, you know, we can't bring in everything to Hawaii, and that we need to be careful about, you know, what we're bringing in, and to just know that, you know, one potential thing could change, you know, can easily become a problem. So please always double check before you bring in anything or ship anything into Hawaii.
Okay, last words, Darcy.
And just parakeeting the other speakers on our panel. In the Department of Agriculture, we've seen losses in capacity, and we're no longer able to follow service the community as much as we'd like to. And that makes it important, and we've got so many more methods of communication for people to be our eyes and ears out in the field. Let us know when there are issues. Call us, and so we can better target.
And the number of that to
643
call?
643-PEST.
Okay, and there you go.
And I also just want to say, you know, whenever I have to talk about negative things, like bad things, you know, it makes me more of a negative person. I want to talk about good stuff, too.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll invite you back again. Well, that wraps it up for our show. We would like to thank our guests, Cynthia Nazario-Leary. She's a statewide and Maui coordinator for the Maui Gardener Volunteer Program. Darcy Oishi is the State Department of Agriculture Plant Pest Control Branch. And Kalani Matsumura coordinates the UH Master Gardener Program on Oahu. And a shout out to DLNR's Jeff Bagshaw at the Maui Forestry Office and Emily Kirk with the Cooperative Extension Service on Kauai for all of their input. And we would like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the line, you can send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org or call our talkback line and record your comments. Our show is produced by Lillian Song, Ryan Finnerty, and Amber Khan Grusby, and we'd like to extend a heartfelt aloha and mahalo to Amber, who embarks on a new adventure in London. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of the conversation. That's Monday.